All right. Thank you, Helen.
Yep.
So let's go ahead to the first slide. And let's, and it kind of, what I'd like to do is three aspects, and I'll show you on the agenda, and here we are. Oh, Etel Media. Here we are. To give you a little overview of where we are in the planning process, I plan to give you some updates on the phase two results, phase one and phase two results, and then try to spend most of the time about discussing some of the ideas that have been brought forward for the phase three within the ARC synthesis direction to get your input. So we had a small meeting on the 6th, kind of an open informal session that was impromptu nearly about a week before at the AGU. And then this is the first main open meeting that we're having, and then we'll move on to, and I'll discuss this at the end, a town hall at the Oceans meeting, and then an advisory committee meeting to work on issues related to phase three. And during this time, we'll be discussing with the ARCS committee concepts within ARCS, ARCS synthesis, go back and forth on that. And then we'll have a representative going from after advisory committee meeting to Seattle during the ARCS committee meeting. And obviously, Neil and Janet are involved in all of these discussions with the ideal to put forward the ARCS system program for synthesis and modeling. Next slide. So we're moving on to slide three. You see it, or am I frozen?
Yeah, I see it.
Yeah, I see it. See it, Jackie.
You see slide three?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Okay, now I see it. All right. So the goal of this planning, the agenda, like I said, go through is I'll provide the brief overview. This is what I just said to you all. The objectives and themes of phase discussion, the draft ones for phase three, and the upcoming planning meetings. I'd like to keep this, I'll lead it, but I don't want to be the full speaker on this. Our advisory committee, our group of the SBI PIs and non, that we have an advisory committee, they'll be interfacing as we go through. And do feel, put your hand up if you have questions along the way or you want to add your thought processes right and not when I get to the slides. So this is a very open discussion on this. Feel free to provide your comments and questions. And for those of you that, I think everybody's on WIMBA, but I have also the listing of where you can download this PowerPoint from our SBI, our server. Next slide. It'll be slide four, Lou. Okay. Mine, for some reason, is going slower, so I'm going to find another. Four. All right. The goals and timeline, I'm assuming that you're seeing that. Mine just has a little bit of delay for some reason.
You can come down here, Jackie. It's coming up real quick if you want to.
That's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. The central goal, as you probably most all of you know, it's, this program has been funded by the National Science Foundation and Office of Naval Research to look at the and to understand to provide the understanding, to prove our understanding the impacts of global change on physics and biochemistry, or the connections between the shelf slope and the deep basin. So the phase one was in 98 to 2001. That involved the synthesis of historical data, sampling, and the modeling. And phase two, which we're coming to the end on, was the four field program. And that took place from Bering Strait out over the outer shelf slope in the Chukchi. And then phase three is what we're having discussions about, and that'll focus in on not necessarily just Pan-Arctic, but regional and could go into Pan-Arctic, both synthesis and modeling, to look at the impacts of a climate change or change in general and self-based interactions. Slide five. Great. The results from the first set of the special volume for deep sea research came out in December, and this is just the front page of the volume. And are anticipated having a couple of more of these subsequent to decisions made at our PI meeting. But basically, this is the first of the data sets to combine together, but there have been papers in other formats. Next. And on this one, what I want to do is that we have data sets that are being put into catalog, and these are just some of the products that are there. We have single and multiple data sets. We also are we're in the process of finalizing and releasing the data sets from Phase 3, and all the Phase 3 ones have been...
Phase 2, you mean?
Yeah, Phase 2, and the Phase 3 ones have been already, data have been released on that. Next, slide 8. Called 7. All right. These are some of the results I just wanted to point out, and I don't think Kyle's online, but these are some of the information. We know we're seeing change up there. However, the change is just more complex than just the reporting of the minimum and sea ice. And some of the aspects that have been brought forward during the SBI program is that there appears to be a significant forcing of the change in the first and multi-year ice by oceanic heat flux and the warming and at the base of the halocline, and that this origin is not only solar with the reduction in the ice, but also advection of Pacific. And the question is, it hasn't been fully resolved of what the interfaces with the Pacific and the Atlantic. And also, the second point is that this melting is occurring throughout the winter, which has implications on the biology, the ice algal community, and the production of it. The third, that there's changes in the coastal polynyas add a significant volume of ice during the inner shelf, and this is some of the sightings on that. Although over in the area the off of Barrow, there's that large polynya to the northwest there, and also other polynyas in the northern bearings northward, but that there's been very little significant melting over in the Mackenzie Shelf, and that there's the dynamics of this ice regime is showing favorable entrainment of sediments in the sea ice, and that this is a form of moving both cross-shelf and the long-shelf sediment and carbon transport. So this is a potential for enhancing land-to-ocean transfer. Next slide. On the modeling accomplishments, this is actually feeds into one of the aspects that were brought up as the ice, and that the reduction of sea ice has been is in agreement with the satellite observation, that we've seen increased fluxes. And I don't know if Wiesla's on yet. He could say a few words, but I'll just blow through this. That there's increased fluxes from the Chukchi Shelf to the Beaufort, and then melting of the perennial ice. That they're seeing quantification of the Chukchi transports, that they're seeing that in combination with the field data that Rebecca Canute and Bob Picard and Tom Weingarten have been involved in, and then looking at property fluxes to the hydrography program and the water column measurements of POC and DOC and various aspects of the SBI program, and looking at the main pathways and rates of this exchange, and then combining this and validating it with a couple biophysical models. And at this point, I would like to add, we can go to the next slide. This is a photo from a figure. This is a combination of modeling data of some of the field results, and what they're identifying is an increased northward flux that's coinciding, this is a Pacific water inflow, with the ice retreat in the 2000, that the studies, both field and modeling, are looking at the Pacific water advection and its effect on the environment. And you can see the period that you can see the arrow to the lower right, and also matching it up with the hydrographic information of this retreat of sea ice in the 2000. Next. And there's been other modeling results that have been done from Carmack and Chapman that looked at what would happen if you continually have this summer ice exposing more and more of the shelf breaks, and the potential for enhanced upwelling for production at the shelf break, and the influence that would have on both outer shelf and shelf slope and deep basin impact. Next. Okay. Before I go on that, there was a few other comments that didn't get in, and I would like to point them out. And that has to do a few of the findings related to DOC. And with Dennis on board, I think he could say something if he'd like to, but that a lot of that DOM is produced and POC on the shelf. It's being rapidly used, and more of it is moving off shelf or being incorporated in the summer period and being transported to the basin. But overall, the DOM is relatively low in the shelf water. The DOM is abundant in the shelf and polar, the terrigenous DOM, and Roger might say a few words, and he has a slide later on. that there's importance. The modern carbon is coming out from the rivers now. There's high levels of what are called colored dissolved organic matter. We're being observed in the SDI region, which is increasing the energy absorption of the surface water. That the DOC is probably not refractory as previously thought in the Arctic Ocean. That's someone's suggestion. And that also that the sediments are potentially an important source of DOC. You're not seeing this on here, but you'll see the slide that you see incorporates some of those ideas in there. So there have been a fair amount of both POC and DOC results coming out to date from the program. We are also seeing some of the highest primary production on the shelf region, that this production is actually going through the falling out of the shelf and into the sediments pretty well unconsumed, and that transport, depending on mechanisms, is either off-shelf or can go eastward on the shelf break. Another point I just bring out is the microbial processing, and Dave can mention something this as we go on, is a lot lower in the western Arctic than the lower latitude regions. That production is high in space and time, and there's an uncoupling between the primary production and respiration. And on this one here, we're seeing on this figure, Lee, would you like to say a few words on this?
And I'm looking at slide 11. Is that still?
Yeah, the FBI results with the partners and the.
Well, I think, and Dennis, of course, with Nick Bates and Dave Castro put together the initial paper in Science that interpreted the decay of VOC in the context of circulation within the Beaufort Gyre, and we followed this up looking at some of the river data. That's coming out of the Freshwater Initiative Project partners and trying to look at the context of the 018 content of that seawater that we collected in SBI and factoring that back to what the sources might be and also looking at DOC with Ron Benner and Dennis's data also. And essentially that's the point, and I think you made that pretty well. Did you want me to cover the Beryllium 7 issue too? Or just mention that?
Yeah, you can.
This is an isotope that's tagged on sea ice. It has a very short half-life of 52 days, and we've detected it as deep as 2,000 meters now in Barrow Canyon. And so it, and we're also seeing high deposition on the continental slopes of cesium-137 in particular, and we're using lead-210 to date sedimentation rates too. So in a lot of the areas where we've been working on the slope, there's a lot of recently deposited material that's showing up there.
All right. Thanks. You go to the next slide. And these are just here to remind me. You'll see these are some of the combined SBI Phase 1 retrospective and Phase 2 results. The upper right-hand corner are the new data sets that we've done during the field season. And the only thing I wanted to point out, I mean, this is an extremely productive region. But it's the turnover of not only we're seeing DOC coming out of these rich, which are the darker colored areas on the left on oxygen uptake, and you see them recorded. The biomass on the right is just a long-term indicator of a lot of food getting to these guys. But if you look to the left, those areas, and as you move out Barrow Canyon, it's the main conduit. We speculated on this, and I think we've pegged this one, that a lot of the production, a lot of the water, a lot of the particulate and dissolved matter is going out through Barrow Canyon, and some of the highest productivity that we're seeing, water and sediments, is in the upper head of Barrow Canyon. But what the sediments are just to take home is that they're releasing nutrients and releasing DOC, and all of those are an important factor in playing into the shelf basin interactions that are going on in this region. And I know Al's on board, and I don't know if you have a statement or two you want to make, Al, on denitrification.
Only that we've measured it, and it's not as high as it was when Lou and I measured. Well, it's in a different place too, but the rates that we're measuring for further north are not as great as the rates that Lou and I got, primarily for further south. But there isn't really, I'm surprised, a whole lot of seasonality, even though we only have those two cruises.
All right. Thank you. Next, slide 13. And I don't, Sue Moore, I don't think, is on the line. Are you, Sue? Well, she sent this on. I just put shade in 30 seconds. We have the recorders that she put on the Bob Picard's line on the over to the east of what we call the East Barrow line, east of, you can see them in the three triangles on the left panel there, and her little instrumentation is the little figure with the yellow floats on the lower left. But on the right, what you're seeing is the acoustics on the gray whales, and this had never been done before, and the dramatic part of it is that the whale sounds are going all the way through January. So they're not leaving as early as they thought they were. The locals are commenting the fact that gray whales are up there longer, and they are in between them and their primary food hunt, and that is would be in the bowhead. And one thing to recognize about grays is they are bottom feeders. Bowheads are water column feeders, but bowheads prefer ice, and usually grays don't. But the fact that there's less ice there, but this is something she would talk about on this, but I think this acoustic information is providing some very interesting changes that we're seeing in that area. And that's the closest, really, that to the higher trophic aspects of this program. Next.
Jackie, I think Dennis Hanson might have had a comment or
question.
Good.
Yeah,
I did, Jackie. I pulled my hand back because we wanted another topic. But I was thinking in terms of the DOC coming out of the sediments, the DOC coming into the system in various ways. Jeremy Mathis, several of you know, has been doing the analysis on eddy formation on the shelf break with Bob Pickard and looking at the carbon in the eddy. And there's a lot of that DOC that's coming off the shelf and a lot of POC coming off the shelf getting spun up in those eddies and then shipped off into the deep basin. So he just submitted that paper. It's a real nice analysis. It's just another highlight for you in the gang.
Great. That's good. Put that in for the next time. Any other comments? All right. So what I'd like to move on to now is the core of what we're actually online for, and that is to discuss some of the draft ongoing new ideas for the Phase 3. And these are some that have been brought forward through the open process, but internally with the SBI, things that were written in the implementation and science planning efforts. So could you move on to the next slide, please? And as we move into these discussions, I just want to reiterate what the current ARC synthesis direction is and where the program, for those of you who may not be as aware of others, but these are kind of some of the core attributes that have been put together and the lower, so the first four bullets, to look at the sensitive and critical components of and interactions driving the Arctic system behavior. The second is to integrate and synthesize modeling results, observations, process understanding, paleo, and human dimensions into that. The reason I'm going through this is because embedded in these are aspects of which Phase 3 will, I think, will add strength to the results. The third is to strengthen interactions between the Arctic research community and the broader Earth system is that for the questions related to what can SBI or some of the results from that say not only regionally, Arctic-wise, but at a larger impact globally, but enhance the communication between the various components, the stakeholders, and public. So within the current ARC's goal for example, for the AO is in advancing the integrated understanding of the system by focusing on the questions that link the various components of the system across both time and space. So looking at cross-cutting questions to allow us to look at system components and function, and as I said, relevance to the not only the Arctic system, but if possible, to the broader Earth, and to use the data sets. And that's where we come into Phase 2 and Phase 1 with the Arctic data sets for the SBI, but there are quite a few coincident programs that were going on and modeling that has been going on by other programs in other countries in this same area. Next. On slide 16 that will come up, these were some of the draft ideas, and what you're looking at is from, like, older to newer. And as we move and model and try to kind of hone down, we're putting out lots of questions or ideas, and then I think we need to, I would suggest, that we're coming up with 3 to 5 kind of central themes of what in Phase 3 would utilize the stepwise information that we receive both in SBI and other programs to move our understanding of processes forward. So to investigate the global consequences for the ecosystem, that's one of the goals of what SBI was built on. to develop pan-Arctic models for looking at what-if scenarios. These are some of the phrases that went on the initial part of our planning at this program. And we identified basically two potential things, and that one was to look at the global change effects on the biology, chemistry, and physical process in the Arctic, which is very broad. And the second was to basically focus in on the carbon and nitrogen cycles and look at these and within that study area and with the information we have on the yield and structure for higher trophic demand.
Jackie, Roger Harvey has a comment.
Great. Roger?
Jackie, I was mostly giving your voice a break for just a second, so I know you're struggling. But I think one thing that, and especially given this group, mostly we're associated with the PIs, and Neil can certainly pipe in, is that to keep in mind that we talk about these draft objectives, and as we go through some of these results and talks, that we're really pushing to solicit ideas from not only the ARCS community, but the PI community as well, and to kind of start to pull these together. I mean, I think having read half of the papers in that first volume, I know that people have a lot of really interesting data sets. And I think one thing that certainly is part of kind of our advisory committee we would like to be able to do is to start to get people talking about those and seeing how we integrate those, whether we're talking about just cross-shelf processes or those linkages to the big system. So as we kind of go through these, I think people need to keep in mind that this is an ongoing process and it's really driven by their input, and so we need to hear from them.
Are there any comments? Yes? Okay. So what are the looking at the carbon currency, I just put this in here because the goal was to look at the production, transport, and fate of the synthesis between marine, freshwater, and sea ice projects. That would be one potential focus, I mean, or use of the data sets. And I would just emphasize there's data, as you know, from the FBI. Freshwater integration has been going on. The study of the Northern Arctic Coastal System, SNAC, study of Arctic System Synthesis, SAS. There's been international projects such as CASES, the Canadian Arctic Shelf Exchange Study, CHIN-ARC, which is the Chinese Arctic Program that they do in coordination with Canada and U.S. and Japan. JWACS, just Joint Western Arctic Climate Study, which is Canada, Japan, U.S., and RASALCA, which is Russian American Long-Term Census of Marine Life, which is U.S. and Russian. So those are all going on in the area, in the Western Arctic area, of which we have the regional interest. So there are a huge number of data sets over the last 4 to 5 years that are coming out from those programs. And with that is the step function of data availability, the oceanographic, sea ice, freshwater inflow, riverine inflow, coastal dynamic, and atmospheric, based off the work that SHIBA's done and the ongoing buoy program.
Jackie, if I can interject one thing, this is Jim Moore, and that is that the access to the data from these projects that you mentioned here, at least for the moment, except maybe for SNACS, is challenging, to say the least. So it's something
I think that's both challenging internally, nationally, and also internationally.
Internationally, yes, indeed.
Yes, yeah. That part of it is something that I think obviously IPY hopefully is going to make it more open across boundaries, but I hear what you're saying. But they're out there, so what it is there are people involved in that. The data sets are there. How we're going to get them is the creativity of the proposal team. So that we do have the step function. We do have a need for coupling the physics and biology and for understanding the effects to the ecosystem of what we see as forcing functions. That's something that I think we are getting poised to be able to move forward on. The phase three will be coincident with programs, and I just bring this out. The search is ongoing, study of environmental Arctic change. The ISAC, which is the International Study of Arctic Change. We have the International Polling Year ramping up. We have international synthesis of, for example, shelf basin exchange, working on that through the Arctic Ocean Sciences Board and CLIC with the climate in the ice and cryosphere. So I would just point that out. I mean, that we're poised in this international and also national effort. We're poised with the poles being focused on. So within this, we're looking, I think, for syntheses from the regional, both regional and or to the Arctic, to look at the ecosystem, the system functioning within the objectives of SBI. We anticipate that these data sets, as I said, that are both SBI and other studies would occur and be available at various levels for the phase three, and that there'd be broad scale implications for studying both Arctic, the results to both Arctic and global processes. Okay. 17, please. So as we moved on through these discussions, here are some of the type of, you can read as well as I can, but they're some of the draft topics of what we might want to be looking at in phase three. We know that there's warming going through, and Rebecca, you could say a few words if you want to on this, but there's warming influx going on through Bering Strait, and what are the implications on the ice regime and the ecosystem, and there's biologists on the phone too, I know. And this is going to be both related to regional, central, and downstream areas. So how can the Bering Strait and downstream influence the global overturning circulation? That brings in climate, ecosystem, and actually ocean-human interactions. Another one has been, is that the SBIR results have revealed the shelf age boundary current in the Canada Basin. It's turbulent. I think Dennis was mentioning there's a lot of eddies and being spun off and moving on and offshore. So we see this as a mechanism, and Dave Katko has been involved in this work, and obviously the Bob Picard and physical oceanographers. The flux of mass nutrients and properties. So are these generic to the entire boundary current, and what are their ramifications to the interior of the Arctic for potential changes that could go on in the boundary currents? These are, like I said, these are coincident with regional assessments and modeling system responses. Is it possible to take what we've done to a Pan-Arctic? It's not necessary, but is there a focus or is there a need, or can we do both? One thing is this bioavailability of a DOM and POC through the studies. And maybe I'm going to put you on this, Roger, for a second, if you would just reiterate what we're seeing between marine and the sea.
Jackie, also there's a question from Rebecca Woodgate or comment.
Oh, good. Rebecca?
Yeah, Jackie, just quickly just say, yeah, we see the Bering Strait warming up, and I'm just writing that up at the minute. Since about 2001, things have got warmer. Fresher and more transport going through there. I also just wanted to say to number two, though, where you say the boundary current, we've got to be a bit careful here with the nomenclature, because when they talk about the Arctic boundary current elsewhere in the Arctic, they mean generally the Atlantic water, and here we're talking more about Pacific water coming on and off. But I think they're great questions. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, Jackie, I can. I didn't write up this one, but I can certainly comment on Dennis. I'm sure he can make some comments as well. I think the point is that we're finding both with dissolved and particulate materials is that, and I think I have a slide. I don't know if you put this later on, but I threw in a kind of a little generic thing later on to kind of focus this idea that carbon transport and cycling both across the shelf and into the basins ends up obviously one of the central themes a number of us have looked at, and also it drives much of the biology in the system. And so I think the idea behind this question is one of bioavailability of multiple pools of carbon, and also the idea of long-term sequestration. So, and of course, with warming waters or more open water areas, how that balance would fit in over the long term, and potentially, obviously, linkages to the paleo if we can get some of those guys involved.
This is Dennis. I'll just throw one more thing in. Our early estimates suggest that this horizontal transport off the shelf and into the deep basin of the organic carbon into the haline waters, it might drive about half of the oxygen utilization out there, the other half coming from vertical exports. So it seems to be important for getting driving metabolism out there in the thermocline, and also for bringing nutrients out there for regenerating or ventilating that system.
Okay. Any other comments? But I think that what they're saying is true, and I think the fact that if we have temperature changes, what the impact is on the marine system, but also the riverine, there's a tie-up in that related to the carbon cycle. The fifth one was related to the photic zone metabolism, carbon fluxes, and how if you alter or change the duration of these contrasting modes of metabolic balance. And I know, Dave, you've been talking about the imbalance basically between the autotrophs and the heterotrophs and the microbial loop. Do you have a word or two you might want to say?
Well, I guess just I think what's really unique about the Arctic and I suppose the Antarctic also is this uncoupling that you have bursts of prior production that lead and fuel food webs later down the road, and we see that that the respiration rates and microbial activity is just a lot less variable. And I think this is lends itself to transport and moving that material off the shelf into the basin.
Okay. Thank you. And then the final one is the influence of the enhanced temperature on plant and secondary production and the potential decoupling with the benthos, which is a big interest, obviously, of mine. But that change between pelagic and benthic, what implications that has to higher trophics, human use, but also on the carbon cycle, because if you change those relationships, there's an impact on what goes off offshore and gets transported or what gets utilized on the shelf. Okay, next. So this is where now we're moving in, and I would say that if folks have ideas where they, you know, looking at some of this or ideas they wanted to bring forward for discussions for a potential phase three type of direction, these are some of the topics that were brought forward, and so this is one by Roger, but I would say after Roger talks, I think I only have one more, two more. You can add some of your input on that before I actually come to call for the question again. So, Roger, do you want to say something about your slide now?
Sure. And I wrote this not so much to suggest a unique theme for the whole program, but mostly to kind of focus a little bit of our discussions and at least start the ball rolling as we talk about what might work for phase three and how we pull together what some people would say are kind of a very diverse kind of group of projects. And the reason I use carbon is not only is it one of my favorite elements, but also it tends to be a good use of currency for the whole system. And so I've just bulleted out a couple of things that always have struck me about the Arctic in general and some of the thing, and also some of the things that could link to other people. And the starting point obviously being that when we look at the Arctic system, and this was back in the Robbie McDonald and Rudy Stein's book, is that, you know, we have a huge disparity in terms of production, in the sense that marine production is an order of magnitude or greater than terrestrial production. But yet, even looking at that, some of our work and work of other people have argued that in sediments, the terrestrial carbon is preferentially preserved. And in fact, we've suggested that in fact that might be the dominant form of carbon that gets preserved over geological timescales. So this has, you know, obviously linkages to both the disconnect that Dave mentioned in terms of the microbial loop, the connect with benthic cycling and material moving down quickly through the water column and benthic pelagic coupling, and then the long-term kinds of process of transport where that material ends up. The effectors of all this is the idea of this different transport mechanisms which could impact both where this material ends up, how it's transported, whether it be from rivers, the importance of ice, geographic differences between some of the discussions I know among the PIs have dealt with these narrow versus broad shelves and where carbon may or may not be focused. And so all these, this brings in some of the physical factors. I mean, we now have the eddies on the table, which in fact weren't on the table a long time ago when we first started this program, so that's been an interesting addition. And then finally, in terms of the larger scale and the idea that within this program we're going to have to think about linkages to the Arctic system, we need to think about either other shelf environments, and this obviously has linkages to things like SBE, and also in terms of carbon sequestration and processing, how does this compare with other environments, whether it be just other polar environments like the Antarctic or more typical quote-unquote temperate shelf environments. So all of those have consequences for climate, and that's where the modelers kind of come in. So these are just, I just kind of threw up a few of these to give us some talking points as we kind of move through this discussion, thinking that carbon, and that's come up already before, that it can provide at least one focus for a currency, just as we could talk about heat budgets or talk about energy in other ways. So it's open for belittling.
Does anybody have any comments or suggestions or revisions? All right, we'll keep that for food for thought. Okay, we can move on to 19. Now, these are some synthesis topics that I'll just throw out between for SBI and ARCS that have come out through various of our discussions with various people that are online and offline. And I may be off the mark on this one, but I'd like some feedback, and obviously others, and that's the bottom line on that in the bold. One might be, and this was brought forward in our previous conversation, is what would the Arctic change influence cycles are really important, be they water, carbon, or heat. And we know they impact the Arctic system, and we have, through various programs within the ARCS program and outside, investigated different aspects of it. And that's why, actually, SBI came out as one of the 7 goals at the previous OAI program, was that to look at the carbon and biogeochemical cycling. So a question I would throw out is, what can we put forward in answer with these with SBI results for the various phases and other available data related to the carbon cycle to either improve the understanding either regionally, Arctic, or globally that would let us move forward to a larger understanding system? Another one would be, will our understanding of ice and physical margin dynamics enable us to evaluate the impact of those change and what that feedback would have on the Arctic system? So I would say that I would just put those out there and ones that we've talked about previously and ask the members of this online meeting if they have suggestions or they want to say, well, that's not where we think a synthesis and modeling effort or that's an idea, but what about this? And within that, we have to remember within the framework of a system synthesis aspect, within SBI, between SBI and the other components of ARCS and the larger science community.
I wonder, Jackie, this is Lee Cooper, whether we could get any feedback from the ARCS committee members that are on the phone about some of the previous slides and the suggestions that came up. Are they kind of what you guys are thinking or talking about in your own discussions, or are we on target, or what?
And I saw Kelly Faulkner has her hand raised.
Oh, good. Well, maybe we could take Kelly's and we can keep that out there, Lee. Take Kelly first, and then maybe somebody can add that has been on the previous discussions. Just for people to know, we've had discussions within, as I said, the SBI group with at some open meetings, and then also within the ARCS committee. So with that, Kelly?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that our understanding of general ocean circulation in the Arctic comes in an unusual large part from the legacy of our understanding comes from the signals that are generated on the shelf. And I think, you know, the classic example would be the silicate maximum, for example. Obviously, in the scenario of change, the nature of these signals, which have been treated in the past as sort of steady state, is going to change. And I'm wondering if, in terms of a synthesis, if we can ask questions like, you know, what have we learned about the mechanisms of the formations of these signatures that would allow us to understand variability, how that variability may affect these signatures as they propagate throughout the Arctic. It looks with the newer oxygen sensor data, for example, that there are measurable, very interesting signatures out in the central Arctic that have to have originated in your study region, among other places. So there's a whole topic when you talk about understanding the Arctic system, a whole topic related to understanding the larger scale Arctic circulation that could be brought into a synthesis.
Good points. Any comments or additions? Well, I would say I know that you know that's one reason that I have a lot of interest on the because of the changes that I'm seeing in the sediment dynamics and I think Al could say something and Lou and even Ken on the changes in the flux rate or potential changes in flux rate with the coupling with carbon, be it coming from the upper water column, the upstream from higher productivity in the southern Chukchi or for input from coastal erosion. And those are different changes, types of carbon, and they will impact the recycling, at least in the sediments, but also the recycling in the water column and the source carbon for microbial breakdown.
And David Hollis,
I think,
his hand raised.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. David?
Yes, I have a question for Jackie and anyone. I don't have a sense of the kind of the modeling to date. My interest is in the modeling, the physical, chemical, and the biological, although my specialty is kind of the physical side. And my question is, I don't have a sense of, have you already constructed a three-dimensional physical, biological, or physical, chemical model? And if not, is that what you want to do now? Is one of your kind of things going forward? And it just makes me pause a little bit. If that hasn't been done, then getting to the question of change sounds hard from the modeling answering point of view, given that I think that's a lot of work to do that for fun and challenging. And can you kind of comment around that?
I can add the two sentences, and people can come in on that. Wiesel Maslowski is in charge of the physical modeling, circulation modeling, and tying out that in with John J. Walsh's biological modeling. So they put together a biophysical coupled model of which they're looking at data sets, and that's one of the papers that is out in this deep sea research volume. That has been looked at, investigated using up to 2002 data. But as far, I think there's wide open of looking at some of the modeling for the biochemical cycling and certain aspects of that system. Does anybody else want to add something to that? I don't know that Wiesel is on there and at all.
I'm just trying to get a sense of where people are and what really is next in terms of modeling coupled chemistry, biology, physics.
Well, I guess the question is what would also think that with the information, we have core data sets out there for looking at from everything from microbial to, you know, basically zooplankton, you know, benthic, that type of thing, all the hydrography. And so there is the data sets from this program and from previous and ongoing program to put into a couple model. And the question would be, is that necessary for the type of questions being put forward? And it's a chicken and the egg. I think it is, but I think we need to say these are the questions to get at the synthesis. How will that, what tech tools do we need to address those type of synthesis questions? And if that's one of them, then I think it's a fair game. Anybody else?
Jackie, this is Terry. I might make a comment since I've been involved a little bit with some of the biological modeling. We have kind of put plans together to look at a lot more of the historical database and to extend some of the biological modeling, for instance, as coupled to the physics back in time to actually some quite historical data going back to the 20s. And so this is one aspect. I can't speak for the physical, the plans on the physical modeling, but I know that we've been looking at broadening our view of the modeling domain back in time quite a long ways and try to have some of these old observations be used as a case study sets of data that we can test the model against.
I see Craig has his hand up.
Yeah, so Don Paravich and I are both on the call, and as Jackie had mentioned, we've been part of earlier conversations between the SBI Advisory Committee and the ARCS Committee, and there's a comment or a question a couple minutes ago about just wanting some feedback on how the AC, the ARCS Committee, sees the these unfolding discussions about SBI Phase 3. And this is not my I'm not an oceanographer, and this is not my area, but certainly from standing on the sidelines, it looks like some really fantastic science has come out of SBI Phases 1 and 2. What the ARCS Committee is really interested in seeing is just having an opportunity now for a broad group of scientists to consider these phase one and phase two findings in the context of the Arctic system and understanding the system as a whole, and obviously in the context of Arctic ocean science. So Don might have some things.
Hello?
Hello?
Yep.
We're still here.
We lost somebody. Oh, Don, are you there?
Still here.
All right, you're up.
Okay, yeah, just to follow on what Craig said, I really enjoyed your presentation, Jackie, and it's clear that there's a lot of really, good, exciting science going on. And as Craig was saying, I think with the direction of ARCS, it's looking for these big overarching questions that bring different things together. And from my perspective, listening to some of the discussion here at the very end was exciting, and it seems to me, and this is just my personal feeling as a nice person that isn't necessarily totally up to speed on all this, that the carbon questions are really pretty interesting, because if you look at overarching things, they're quantities like heat, which Sheba was looking at, fresh water, which FWI was looking at, and I think, carbon may well fit in a similar vein.
Perhaps another comment I might make is that, this is Craig Nicholson again, is that I've heard a bit of discussion about the need for a pan-Arctic focus, and I'm not sure that that's necessarily what the ARCS committee is looking for. It's not true that to do Arctic system science, it has to be immediately now at a pan-Arctic scale. And I think we want to make a differentiation between a kind of geographic focus and a system focus. Those are not necessarily the same thing. It could be that there are certain regions that have a very important role to play within the Arctic system, and those regions doesn't need to be pan-Arctic. It could just be parts of the Arctic, and so it could be that's where the focus should be. So I don't think you should need to constrain yourself to the idea that unless it's pan-Arctic, it's not going to fly. But at the same time, there really is a strong emphasis in wanting to understand system behavior and the bigger questions.
So it does seem like if you can understand or move the understanding forward by a regional focus, that's fine. But that doesn't exclude if you can justify why understanding or your plans for this regional can give you information. If you looked at some other place around the Arctic and combined it with these data sets to look at a pan-Arctic, so it's not excluding, but it doesn't have to be. Right?
Yeah, I think that would be a good way of putting this. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good way to summarize it.
And it does look to me, the problems notwithstanding in trying to mesh data sets from different programs, but it does look to me like there's a lot of very exciting potential for combining or doing this sort of comparison stuff between SBI and some of the other things that you've talked about, like cases.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else?
Yeah, a quick comment. This is Roger. I'm not going to put my hand up on the screen, but Craig, that's kind of nice to hear. I think one thing that as both within talking among the PIs and within the advisory committee, one thing we've struggled with is how do we handle the what we think of are some wonderful and not very well integrated data sets within SBI itself in terms of the shelf environment versus the need to expand this to the whole system. And this is something that I don't think we're totally clear on. And certainly we want to try to obviously make the most of the kind of data we have for these shelf environments. But I think everybody, and I may be wrong on this, but I think everybody sees the need to be able to link this to the larger system. I think the question may be just how well we do that.
Yeah, it's obviously it feels like an exercise in walking a tightrope with all this stuff. But I think that's really where the creative science is coming out at the moment. It's trying to work out what's realistic to do without overreaching and then not hitting the goal.
David Holland has his hand raised.
David here. A question regarding cases and SBI. Does anyone have a sense that, even though these were very different projects, that somehow some piece of each of these are trying to tell a similar story about how the budget of something, as people have mentioned, for example, carbon, and if you can link these two things, you can have a more robust science story because you saw something happen in two different places. Does anyone have any comments about the, not so much that, but maybe more the realizability of actually being able to link two such projects?
Well, I'll say something for that because we have a couple of our people that are associated between cases and between the that are SBI PIs and cases. And one of the things is that some of the data sets I know for the benthic work that I'm doing and one of the students working on sediment fluxes, the compare and contrast is exactly within what we, when we initiated this SBI program phase was to look at what are the difference between wide and narrow shelves. And the narrowest we got was about 100 kilometers into the Beaufort Sea, and what cases provides is a lot of the narrow and then the rivering input. So, I mean, the potential is, I think, quite strong for the data set. They collected, they have shelf basin exchange, they collected very similar types of data as, that, as were done, and if not more in certain things than SBI. And so I know they're having their meeting, a PI meeting in about a month. And so some of that, you know, I think there's crossover. For example, like Vizsla is involved, Maslowski with the physical modeling is dealing with some of those folks there. And there are a few other people that have, know people or have been involved with people that are working on the cases. So I think that, you know, they're coming out with their publications now, and I think if we maybe figured, if you're creative, whoever's creatively proposing is able to tie that energy in those data sets, I think we will come out with a another step function, better understanding of a region that's going from the wide Chukchi, which is the Pacific influence, and then you have that rivering influence. It adds some synthesis part of it, a boundary that we don't have in one region or the other.
And do you have any sense that it's a one-way street that SBI feeds fluid and things and information to the cases region and vice or not?
I think it has to be built on. I mean, we've been trying to do this along the way, and then everybody's going out in the field and collecting. I think on PI to PI, you know, I have no question. We have talked, for example, Louis Fortier, who leads that, and I have talked about having a synthesis, a meeting in which we would bring PIs from the different program for certain types of components and have, you know, have a workshop to do the beginnings of just this. So that's an idea I would throw out there. But as far as is it much of a crossover as you would like to have? I mean, as in an ideal world, it's probably not as much. But I know that there are Americans that were funded in cases, and there were we have a few Canadian colleagues on SBI. So I'm optimistic, but it would need somebody to push it.
Yeah, this is Roger. I think you're right, Jackie and David. I think there's lots of potential there. I mean, CASES is a different program and a lot more people involved, so I think some of those linkages are harder to establish. But in our case, for example, Rob McDonald is actually a co-PI slash collaborator on our project, and he's involved with the CASES. And in fact, one of the things that we've tried to do in terms of discussions is talk about how you link those, what are really very different systems in the sense of carbon. And that gets back to the carbon-centric mode that several of us are in the sense that I think both, and as Jackie mentioned with the benthic, I think there are these other shelf environments that can provide some important clues and contrast to what we find in the SBI region. And hopefully that's a two-way street, and I think it is. I think they're just not quite as far along as we are, because we had the benefit of both the retrospective study and a field program that started a little earlier.
Yeah, this is Terry. I might make a comment that on the other side of the from CASES, the Rusalka area is putting the western bounds on the SBI area. And while it's a little bit smaller program because it didn't have quite as much resources, it too contributes to, I think, the overall goals of SBI by producing some results that sort of put a bound on the western side of the SBI area. And in terms of how this kind of fits into the phase three area of synthesis is that the Rusalka program is planning on going out in the field in 2008 to look at the change that we can maybe see in duplicating stations that have been taken before. And there's an opportunity here for SBI to sort of make some predictions and then possibly field test that, at least in the western side, by checking against observations that are actually going on. And it's fairly heavily loaded with some of the benthic components, and some of the PIs are synonymous with SBI.
Kelly Foster has her hand raised.
Yeah, I just wanted to have, maybe Jackie can clarify this. There's a call out right now for synthesis, Arctic-wide synthesis. I think the due date is in March, if I remember correctly. I'm just wondering how you envision the SBI synthesis relating to these other general calls, and perhaps people who are on the committee that's advocated synthesis could speak to that as well.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that, I think, with Neil and Janet and some of the ARCS committee, but I envision the SBI, the ARCS synthesis has the call that's in March will have aspects that are embedded with a separate SBI call in which we'll be focused on using the systems approach with the SBI information we have for specifically to fulfill the synthesis questions related to the Western Arctic or for the SBI objectives. But within that, would it be embedded this synthesis, the need to use that those data sets and the studies and understanding to push the understanding of the Arctic synthesis forward? And I guess I would put that towards I'd like to get some feedback both from the ARCS committee that helped develop that or put ideas forward for that synthesis call, and Neil.
So this is Craig again. Let me back up a little and just spell out a bit of the context. I don't know whether this is whether everyone's heard all this context, but when the current ARCS committee started thinking about this direction of synthesis, we had the sense that the ARCS program wasn't generating quite as much excitement at the National Science Foundation as it could be. We were also starting to get messages from Neil that there were strong budget pressures coming down the road, and I think that Neil had correctly anticipated some of those things. I mean, ARCS has by far the biggest slice of the OPP budget, and there's been a need to keep defending that in a sense to make sure that stays within ARCS. And so there was a strong push to make, I think it was a push in two directions. The one was to take this really strong component focus from ARCS, from the first decade or so of ARCS's history, and to really push that forward to look at the system behavior in a stronger way. And the second push was to tease out more of the implications and the societal relevance of Arctic change. And so that spans everything from human dimensions issues to, in SBI world, the upper trophic level stuff, to implications for the rest of the globe and connections from the Arctic system to the rest of the global system. So those are the two main thrusts that the ARCS committee has been trying to move things in, the main directions. And I think that to speak to Kelly's question, the call that went out last year for synthesis and the call that has a due date in March 2006 are intended for the broad ARCS community. That doesn't preclude any SBI investigators from putting something in on that. My understanding is that there's about another year. Is that right, Jackie? Of current SBI phase two.
No, yeah, it ends in December of 2006.
December 2006. Okay. And so I think what the AC is envisioning is that the a future call would be perhaps a little more focused on taking all the good stuff, the oceanographic stuff that's come out, and exploring the broader Arctic system implications of that data. Does that help at all, Kelly?
I guess I just was wondering, you know, so you're saying a future call, you don't have a target date or anything like that yet?
Neil's the best person to speak to those kinds of issues.
This is Don Perovich. Just to add on a little bit to what Craig was saying, I think in general in these synthesis activities, there really is a sense that we're going to look and try to foster as much collaboration as possible. There was this first call that came out a little while back for synthesis projects, and that group is starting to get together to look at the ways where we can interact. And I think you can see it in some of what Jackie presented today, how, you know, she's been looking out and seeing how, you know, an SBI phase 3 can connect to this work and then these ongoing synthesis efforts. So I think there's, you know, really some great opportunities to, you know, tie things together and look for synthesis within projects and then also between projects.
And Neil has his hand raised.
Yeah, I'll just try and put in my two cents. I think in general, Craig and Don have answered more or less correctly, perhaps not simply, but as I see it, the overall goal of ARCS is to address issues relating to the Arctic system and understanding the Arctic system. And this whole synthesis effort has been a step towards doing that and trying to, if you will, lift the level of attention to the system. And the fact that we will have had two calls when this is over for general ARC synthesis really doesn't have anything particular to do with the topic of discussion today, which is how to deal with phase 3 of the SBI program. In essence, most of the efforts that have run in ARCS for a while have been asked at some point to engage in some kind of synthesis, though not all of them have been funded specifically. I mean, that is, as a separate competition. I think the terrestrial programs had a synthesis effort, but it was relatively small compared to this. And that's exactly what we're trying to figure out now, is scoping out what this would look like. And what I believe the committee has been basically saying, and what I agree with, is that this is an opportunity for the SBI effort to relate things that it has learned to the Arctic system and, if you will, lift their sights to the horizon and start looking around rather than just focusing on the Arctic, on the SBI efforts. That doesn't mean that they can't include the SBI efforts. So this is an SBI-oriented look at the relationship of SBI results to the system, as I view it anyway, and we're trying to scope out exactly what that would look like.
Thank you. Anybody else have a few words to say? Does that answer what you need to tell us for the time being?
I guess so, yeah.
For us.
This is Lou Cottespotti. I think Kelly gave, at least the way I view it, an interesting example of a project that would, I think, be along the lines of what Neil and the ARCS committee members were driving at. When she talked about signals that are generated in the SBI region being picked up elsewhere in the Arctic and used to interpret the circulation of the Arctic. And I suppose that would include, for example, the high supersaturations we see in Barrow Canyon.
Right.
So that we would start, the synthesis from an SBI, the SBI call for synthesis would kind of begin with the SBI data, not end there, but perhaps begin there.
I think that's a good point, because it's something like was brought out earlier with the eddies and the function of moving carbon dissolved and particulate offshore and then what moving it and the importance and connectivity of the Arctic system and what happens when you change those modes of production and incorporation and also the ecological changes that then provide signals for that, let alone the physical signals that, of course, change that are involved in those eddies too. So That's a connectivity. So I see signals as a, you know, as a one of a very good idea.
This is the deal. You know, what we're trying to do is look at the data you've got
right.
in ways other than just oceanographically. We're trying to go one step further and see if we can learn new things from them. And that, you know, I think, for example, the piece you put up about the proportion of marine versus terrestrial carbon in the system may pose some interesting questions for people even outside of the oceanographic community. And that's the sort of thing we're looking for. Tease something more out of the data than you would get if you just summarized the SBI data and went on to the next oceanographic project.
And to piggyback on that, it's kind of it's an opportunity to interpret for the broader scientific community how important the SBI findings are for understanding these key elements of the system, the Arctic system's function and its behavior. So Kelly's suggestion sounds really good to me.
Okay, I have a few more slides that I'd like to walk you through, and then we'll come back to that final SIM question. So if you, in the next few minutes as I walk you through these, just kind of like where we're going in the planning stage, and then you can bring forward at the last few minutes any additional things you think about over the next 3 or 4 minutes. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. And I just wanted to bring up the data products, and this is Jim Moore. I know you might have something to say about it, but there's the possibility of making the, you know, what kind of needs would be useful, the composite, the integrated data sets that are valuable for phase three. We have data from all the different cruises, and the how that might be what useful products is an idea, you know, something needs to be thought about too that could help the community to address some of these type of questions. And to remember too that this is the coordination part of it between, I know CERCH is going through this with their data management and for the International Polar Year too, and the coordination of our data, the SBI data sets within the Arctic system, and then continue to populate these data sets for phase three. So when the data would be available now, data would be added to it, so as people move on through phase three, they'd be able to work with that. Is there anything more you want to say, Jim, about data?
I think that SBI has is in a unique position to help set the tone in the sense of the conversations we've just had in terms of trying to help establish these linkages and to help identify the signals, at least from its component, that I think lead very positively to getting a better understanding basin-wide. And what we hope to do is, based on your all's input, is to organize our data to make it as simple and as straightforward as possible for you to access and use it for the broader studies that would obviously occur in a synthesis effort. That's all, Jackie.
Okay. Well, I would just add to that is that I think the issue brought up of being able to access other data, I mean, there has to be kind of a program manager to program manager and data manager to data manager between countries. Because I can see, for example, like the cases of Canadian data and the U.S. data and the German, I mean, if you go that line, or if you just want to work with the Japanese data or the Russian data, there's going to have to be some way which is put forward to streamlining data access for the scientists involved in whatever program, whatever way they want to move with their proposal. So I think that's an important thing that we can't lose track of, and where that data is, how it's going to be accessed, and how it can be utilized.
The linkages that are being made now in the data management sense between CERCH and IPY, and necessarily with ARCS via our work and the work of ADCC and so forth, I think will help make this possible. Reaching out to the other countries and other projects, I think, as stated before, will be the challenge. But the payoff, of course, is huge. So that's certainly going to be an early topic related to IPY, and certainly as the CERCH data management team begins to get its act together as well.
Okay, thanks. The next one is just briefly is just to emphasize that we are going forward. In as we ideally, the SBI on the phase three will be going on when the ASB clicks the IPY various programs, and I'm just putting you towards some of the one of the websites in which looking at shelf-based and exchange in a pan-Arctic sense, and although it may just be working 5 and 6 or working something like that, but these will not be ongoing, whatever is happening by phase three, independent or within at least the IPY type of neighborhood. Other programs will be looking at similar type questions, and whether or not that needs to be tapped is subject to discussion. Next. And then finally, I would just say number 22 is the upcoming planning meetings and for input. I mean, you can always email me or anybody on the advisory committee for SBI any ideas you might have after you get offline. For the next one, I'll just take you through what's coming up in February. We will have an open town hall meeting at the Oceans meeting in Hawaii during the AGU ASLO meeting there. It'll be after Wednesday, the 22nd. We have the special session 22nd and 23rd on Pan-Arctic Margin Dynamics, a large component of folks ranging from physics to ecosystems. And then next, 24, this is the town hall meeting. It'll be on the 22nd of February at 6:30 in the Hawaii Convention Center. And basically to put out into the open forum, similar type of discussions we've had now, we'll hone with the information we got on this online, add to some of the information, bring it forward in front of a live audience and get feedback at that point too. Next. On the synthesis topics here, if you had any overall comments on that, or the second one, was, if you have any more suggestions for the topics of focus for Phase 3 and the framework actually within the Arctic System Synthesis efforts, if you don't bring them up now, like I said, there's ways you can just send me an email with any input you want to provide. The best way, any ideas to get that open community session to function very productive when we have a couple hours in front of an open audience to give and take. And then if you have any final comments, I'd like to hear them. And I would say that at that point, I'll leave it there and then thank everybody else afterwards. Does anybody have anything they want to add? Any comments?
Jackie, this is Roger. I just like one comment, I think, and Bob Campbell might have mentioned this earlier in our exchanges and talking about the PI meeting specifically, but one thing that I think, and given that we have a number of PIs associated with this discussion, I think one point that Bob made would be that we need to start this discussion obviously now and continue it, but also for these potential synthesis type topics or places that we can integrate data across disciplines, biology, chemistry, physics, whatever, that the PI meeting, we're going to have time within that for people to start to pull data together. And so that's another place that people can actually start to pull some of these ideas together, because we'll have time to take that and fold that into another kind of summary for people to comment on.
Good point.
Jackie, I have one question. You have that deep sea research special issue. Did you acquire a number of those?
Yes, I do have some, so I can just, if you would like one, I'd send you off with a little invoice.
Right. Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, as part of your town hall, if you might want also to make it clear where people.
Yes.
If you have enough, I have no idea what you have.
I ordered a couple of dozen, so yes. Because they wanted $450 if you ordered them separately and $50 if you bought them in bulk. So, yes, I'll bring them forward as an option at the meeting, and they can get a hold of Kim for that and do that. And then they're all available. We'll download. We posted them on the FBI website, too. You can get them from as PDFs. But as a monitor, yeah, that's a good point. I'll bring that. I'll add that to the PowerPoint.
Jackie, this is Ken.
Yes, Ken.
Will this these series of meetings coming up, and this one as well as the ones in Hawaii, will this probably be the last time we get together, at least face-to-face, the Hawaii meeting? Is that correct?
I think that's correct with the people's input that I've received in the coming winding down. That'll
right.
be the last PI meeting.
And do you plan other additional E-Town meetings like this later this spring in preparation for phase three for to
No, I said my plans, unless it's I'm told otherwise, is we go from here, we go to the OceanRFC meeting, we go to the PI meeting, we go to Washington to have discussions with Neil and Janet and our advisory committee, we go to the ARCS committee meeting at the end of March, and then we hand a composite of our coordinated efforts with the ARCS committee to Neil.
Okay.
Particularly since I'm out of here. No, I'm in the field from March and from May and then July. And so, but I think we, this is kind of the sequence that we put forward to the ARCS committee and to Neil, and this is what we've been pursuing. I think this is how it will proceed unless told otherwise.
No, that's good. I just wanted to hear the time frame one more time. That's,
right,
that's
right.
Fine.
So it's coming. We'll come together. Any other info? So it's, like I said, you can email me any, you can also call me if I answer the phone. But I wanted to thank Laura and ARCS for organizing the online meeting. And to all of you who took the time to phone in and work your computers and talk on the phone. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jackie.
Okay.
Thank you, Jackie.
Thanks. Bye-bye.